case will be taken under advisement. And we will go on to case number 7. And that is appeal number 022611, Robin Smith versus Barnhart. Mr. Mulvaney.
Good morning, may I please report? My name is Patrick Mulvaney. I represent Robin Smith in this appeal from denial of her claim for Social Security disability benefits. Robin Smith suffers from quite severe brain damage, which renders her totally disabled. Her brain tumor and resulting organic mental impairment and depression met or equal to listings 1105, 1202, and 1204, step 3. And the ALJ's erroneous step 5 denial decision that she can work is contrary to Social Security ruling 96-8P and must be reversed because the ALJ failed to consider all of the relevant evidence. The ALJ conceded that Robin Smith had a brain tumor with memory impairment and depression, but denied her application because he determined that her functioning was not so impaired as to meet the B requirements, severity requirements of the listings. The evidence ignored, misstated, or arbitrarily rejected by the ALJ, however, proved that her functioning was sufficiently impaired to meet those requirements, that she had marked impairment in adult activities of daily living, social functioning, and concentration, persistence, and pace. For example, Dr. Ingwell's psychological evaluation reported that she had a diagnosis of major depression, recurrent severe, and that she could not manage her own funds. Dr. Wood's report of psychiatric status reported she had to stop working due to her illness. Dr. Droko's neurologic evaluation reported that she had cognitive impairment, which would significantly reduce her ability to work. Social Security's contact with the claimant's mother reported that Robin could not drive anywhere or go anywhere alone, unaccompanied, or she got lost. Robin did not do any cooking. She does not run the vacuum because she gets headaches. Her mother must go over all the forms and letters with her. Dr. Karikin's neuropsychological evaluation reported that she complains of poor concentration, difficulty comprehending others, and trouble spelling. She forgets doctor's appointments and becomes lost even when in familiar places. She forgets when she has taken medications and when she has eaten. She forgets what others have told her. She has difficulty exercising good judgment when driving and has had several close calls secondary to being inattentive. These are all factors which show that she has a marked impairment in activities of daily living. She also has marked impairment in social functioning. Social Security's contact with the claimant's mother reported that Robin gets easily agitated due to her impaired concentration. She misunderstands many things that are said to her. Social Security's second contact with the mother reported that Robin was having difficulty with her memory. She did not remember conversations. She misinterpreted and misunderstood what others said to her. On shopping trips, the mother was always having to apologize to someone about Robin. For example, Robin would purchase two or three items. The cashier would read them off. Robin would snap back at the cashier, "That's not what I purchased." Dr. Karikin's neuropsychological evaluation reported she is also complaining of becoming verbally aggressive and sometimes physically aggressive. She is impatient. The evidence also shows that Robin Smith had marked impairment in maintaining concentration, persistence, or pace. Social Security's contact with the claimant's mother, both, I'd refer to these two contacts, all of which were ignored by the ALJ. He never gave any consideration to this. But contact with the mother reported that she had to stop her hobbies due to her decreased concentration. Dr. Wood's report of psychiatric status reported that she could not attend to a simple repetitive task continuously for a two-hour period of time because of her concentration. The ALJ just flatly rejected that based on no other reason than his own psychiatric opinion. Social Security's contact with the claimant's mother reported that she watches television programs but cannot concentrate on the program. Before surgery, she was very good at crocheting, but she could no longer crochet because she could no longer keep up with the counting required. Burnett v. Bowen requires reversal and remand of this case. There, the claimant collapsed at work due to a seizure caused by a brain tumor. After the tumor was surgically excised, he continued to have problems caused by brain damage. The ALJ ignored evidence that proved the claimant was disabled and that he could not be able to treated for any other jobs. This court reversed and remanded the denial decision because the ALJ failed to consider all of the evidence and failed to articulate the reasons for his conclusions in a manner sufficient to permit informed review. Steele v. Barnhart relies on Burnett and also requires reversal of this case. This court reversed and remanded the denial decision because the ALJ mischaracterized the medical evidence of the claimant's epilepsy. The court stated, but regardless whether there is enough evidence in the record to support the ALJ's decision, principles of administrative law require the ALJ to rationally articulate the grounds for a reasoned decision and confine our review to the reasons supplied by the ALJ. That is why the ALJ, not the commissioner's lawyers, must build an accurate and logical bridge from the evidence to her conclusion. Social Security ruling 96-8P lists the types of evidence the ALJ is required to consider in rendering a residual functional capacity assessment. These include reports of daily activities, lay evidence, recorded conversations, medical source statements, and a need for structured environment. This ALJ's residual functional capacity assessment are contrary to this because he ignored or arbitrarily rejected relevant evidence which proved that Robin Smith could not perform even simple jobs. The ALJ would cite, for example, the 12-2096 neuro-oncology evaluation, but ignore portions of it showing that the abnormality in the brain was getting larger, that she continued to have headaches after the surgery, that she was having problems with memory loss, being unable to remember names, numbers, and dates. The ALJ repeatedly cited the 7-7-97 neuro-oncology evaluation, but ignored the findings that Robin was now having the headaches and was having difficulty understanding written material. The ALJ cited the 9-4-97 neuro-oncology evaluation, but ignored that Robin continued to have headaches and fatigue, and that she had difficulty making decisions. Her physician concluded that her cognitive complaints probably are due to a combination of frontal lobe dysfunction and depression. The ALJ repeatedly cited the 9-16-97 psychological evaluation, but ignored Dr. Ingwell's diagnostic conclusions that Robin had major depression, recurrent severe, and a GAF of only 60. The ALJ ignored the 9.997 Social Security question of Robin's mother also. She stated that Robin had stopped her daily Bible reading because she couldn't concentrate, that her impaired concentration caused her to become agitated, that Robin had difficulty understanding what others said to her. The ALJ repeatedly cited Dr. Wood's 9-30-97 report of psychiatric status, but ignored its diagnostic conclusion identical to Dr. Ingwell's of major depression recurrent with an even lower GAF of 52. And I go on and on and on. The selective manner in which the ALJ would pick and choose among the evidence to find support for his preconceived decision. He did not give her a fair consideration of the evidence. He selected only those portions of the evidence that supported his decision. In essence, the ALJ determined that if Robin Smith could attempt to perform some daily activities, she was not disabled. But this is contrary to this court's holding in Clifford v. Apfel that a claimant's ability to perform minimal daily activities does not establish that she is capable of engaging in substantial gainful activity. Reserve the balance. Thank you,
Mr. Mulvaney. Ms. Kim.
May it please the court, my name is Christine Kim and I represent the Commissioner of Social Security. Ms. Smith challenges the ALJ's findings at steps 3 and steps 5 of the sequential evaluation. Ms. Smith first argues that the ALJ should have found her disabled at step 3 because she meets or equals listings 11.05B pertaining to certain types of brain tumors, 12.02 dealing with organic mental disorders, and 12.04 dealing with affective disorders. I'd first like to mention that while Ms. Smith's counsel says that Ms. Smith suffers from brain damage, the evidence shows that she has a brain tumor, but there is no indication at all that she has brain damage in any way.
Well, let me just tell you this. When the frontal lobe is knocked out, as happened here, cognitive functioning goes. It's eroded. It goes. So, if that isn't brain damage, I guess, I don't know what is.
Well, the ALJ conducted a thorough evaluation of the objective medical evidence, and he considered Ms. Smith's complaints of concentration and memory problems. And based on her testimony, as well as clinical findings by several physicians, including neurologists, he concluded that she had mild impairment, and that she had she often had deficiencies in the areas of concentration, persistence, and pace, but that it was not frequent. So in terms of that criteria, in determining whether she met a listing, she didn't even meet that criteria.
How are you going to deal with Dr. DeWitt, who reported that due to the worsening of her condition, another craniotomy was going to have to be performed? They do the craniotomy, they resection the tumor, because it was progressively getting larger and she was having progressive cognitive problems.
Well, first of all, some of the evidence that Ms. Smith's counsel refers to was first submitted to the Appeals Council, and any evidence that was submitted for the first time to the Appeals Council should not be considered by this court in order to determine whether substantial evidence supports the decision of the ALJ, because that evidence was not before the ALJ.
Was Dr. DeWitt's report before the council? Would you include Dr. DeWitt in that?
Can you please tell me which report you're referring to?
The March 15th. 1999.
Yes, that evidence was after the ALJ's decision on January 22nd, 1999. So the ALJ did not have a chance to consider that evidence, and that postdated the ALJ's decision. But in any case, we are not disputing that Ms. Smith has a brain tumor, but under listing 11.05B, Ms. Smith must show more than just the existence of her tumor. She must then go on to show that she meets or equals either or one of listings 11.02 or 11.03, which deal with seizures, 11.04A or B, which deals with disorders of the central nervous system, or listing 12.02. Ms. Smith only alleges that she satisfies listing 12.02, but the ALJ reasonably found that she did not meet 11.05B because she did not meet 12.02. Ms. Smith, she recites a long list of evidence in her brief, but she fails to show how that evidence shows that she meets each and every requirement of any of these listings, and it is Ms. Smith's burden to prove that she meets every single criteria of a particular listing, and she just fails to do that here. And, Ms. Smith also alleges that her depression meets or equals a listing 12.04. Once again, she recites a long list of evidence without specifically explaining how each and every criteria of listing 12.4 is met.
Would you say that the ALJ's decision reflects whether he considered evidence showing that Ms. Smith had difficulty performing her limited daily tasks? He states that she performs them. He hasn't, to my understanding, assessed the quality of the activities.
Well, the ALJ discussed her daily activities a couple of times in his decision. The first time he discussed it was when he considered the B criteria under listings 12.02 and 12.04. He discussed her testimony, and she testified that she engaged in various activities such as driving, cooking, doing the laundry, cleaning the bathroom, going grocery shopping, going out to restaurants, and going to church and to Bible study. And he noted that These activities, while they were not extensive, they were certainly not markedly limited, and so he found that she had moderate limitations in daily activities.
What I'm asking you is whether or not he analyzed the quality of her social contact, her ability to function, where I'll find that, because that would help me a lot.
Well, I believe he described what her testimony was, and he the quality part, I would say, when he concluded that her activities were not extensive, however they were not markedly limited, I believe that that shows that he was doing some analysis of the quality of her activities. As well as her social functioning, he again found that she did have moderate limitations in this area as well, but that there were no significant difficulties with her interpersonal interactions. She herself testified at the hearing that she got along well with people and that she socialized with her friends when she was at church. So again, she had some limitations, and the ALJ found that they were moderate, but yet they simply were not markedly limited.
Moving to step five, I mean, isn't the decision the ALJ made problematic there, because there were jobs identified that she could do, but there was no mention of some of the problems with those jobs, like being a maid and, you know, using all those cleaning materials, and her headache issue, and the fact that she suffered from fatigue and needed frequent naps. How could she really keep a job given that situation?
Well, the ALJ, he based his hypothetical question to the vocational expert on his RFC finding, and while Ms. Counsel notes before this court today that the ALJ's RFC finding was lacking and that it didn't include all her limitations, I would like to point out that Ms. Smith did not raise the issue of the ALJ's RFC finding before the district court, and therefore she has waived that issue. And in that respect, the ALJ properly relied on his RFC finding. It's too late for Ms. Smith to object to that finding now. And since the RFC finding has not been challenged, and is also it's based on the ALJ's consideration of the evidence as a whole, and it is supported by the medical evidence and the other evidence in the record, the ALJ's hypothetical question to the VE was proper, and therefore the ALJ could rely on the VE's testimony in response to that RFC and not the additional limitations that that Ms. Smith claims that she has.
Yeah, but the VE testified that her fatigue and need for frequent naps were conditions which would prevent Ms. Smith from working. And the ALJ never explains why he discredits her testimony that she suffers from this sort of fatigue and need for frequent naps.
The ALJ found that.
But Judge Rovner's statement was true. You don't dispute that he never explained why he disregarded it. Let's get to that first.
That he disregarded her.
Yeah, what the VE said, because he said the fatigue and the naps and everything would prevent her from doing a job. But he never made any comment about that. That's what we're asking. And that's true, right? He never explained why he disregarded what the VE said. That is, that yes, there are these jobs that she could, you know, you could consider those jobs, but because of the naps and fatigue, I mean, you can't do these jobs and every 15 minutes need a nap for every half hour, every hour. You can't stay employed like that. That's what he never dealt with or explained why he was disregarding it.
If Ms. Smith had a problem with the ALJ's RFC finding, which is really what you're getting at, is her RFC.
I understand your waiver, but I'm getting to the merits. There's nothing in there that explains why the ALJ disregarded.
True. I can't really say. I just don't know for sure.
Okay.
but we submit that substantial evidence supports the ALJ's decision that Ms. Smith was not disabled because she could perform a significant number of jobs at Step 5, and therefore we request respectfully that you affirm the ALJ's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kim. 1 minute, 30 seconds.
Two important items of evidence. One is Dr. Wood's psychiatric evaluation, where he says that Robin Smith could not, her concentration was not such that she could focus on a simple repetitive task for a 2 hour period of time. Dr. Wood said she couldn't do that. And the ALJ threw Dr. Wood's opinion out the window and said, yes, she, on my own opinion, yes, she can focus on a simple repetitive task for a 2 hour period of time without ever giving any evidence to support the ALJ's conclusion. Secondly, Dr. Wood's evaluation, psychiatric evaluation, is almost identical to Dr. Engwell's psychological evaluation. They both came up with the same, so there's no conflict in evidence here. The psychiatrist agreed with the psychologist, and the psychologist agreed with the neuropsychologist, and all the evidence is consistent that Robin Smith, after her brain tumor surgery, needed a keeper. She needed somebody to be with her all the time, or she got lost. Even in familiar places. She got lost going to the psychiatrist's office. Thank you.
Thank you very much to both Mr. Mulvaney and Ms. Kim in the case.